it just came out and it didn't make sense to me too. But they were pushing these mandates in their own offices.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Freedom Feature. And I'm your host, Barry Bassi. With me today, I have Eva Chipiak, who is a lawyer, a freedom fighter, an individual who even cross-examined the prime minister in her career. Eva, it's great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me. Nice to be here.
All right. So, Eva, I'm just wondering if you could just tell our audience a little bit about your story and what has motivated you to be so involved in the issues of freedom in Canada.
Where do I start? So I'm from Edmonton, Alberta, born and raised here in Edmonton, but have been in and out of Edmonton quite a bit. I actually went to law school in Ottawa. And after graduating law school, the next time I was in Ottawa was in the middle of the Freedom Convoy, so quite a different time. But I guess I'm not your typical lawyer. This is my third time back into the practice of law. I've taken some time off to travel the world and things like that. So, but throughout my career, I always was kind of representing the underdog. In Alberta, I was representing landowners against big oil and gas companies, as well as the government when they were taking land for expropriation of expanding a highway or public transportation, things like that. So just by chance, that's the kind of law I fell into. I always really enjoyed helping kind of the more vulnerable party. And I saw also, I was not working at the time when COVID started. I had opened a yoga studio and wellness cafe that went sideways once we were closed for so long. And I just was watching lawyers not, you know, really standing up and saying much. Well, first it was kind of doctors and then it was lawyers once mandates were coming in. And I'm like, what is going on in this country? Why isn't anybody standing up and speaking out? And I was keen to get involved and then ended up getting hired by a charitable organization in Canada. And that's how I got involved in some of these quite high profile cases, including the federal travel ban with the former Premier Brian Peckford, and then representing some of the more notable protesters in Ottawa. And then, as you mentioned, cross-examining the Prime Minister.
So tell me about, you know, I find as well in my own experience that there's very few lawyers that were willing to speak out or even take cases. I've had some individuals say to me that, you know, it's very few lawyers would even take their case when it came to the issues of conscience with respect to the COVID-19. What's your sense of that? Have you noticed that as well?
Oh, yeah, for sure. There's only a few lawyers that took it on. But, you know, what went on over the last 2-3 years, it's also insanely diverse and complicated from a legal perspective, which is why, you know, it's not like somebody can just jump in and take it. There were cases of not environmental. That's the one thing I think we didn't see during the COVID time, but a lot of employment issues to start with.
Yes.
And of course, you know, so, and that's a very specialized area of law, for one thing, too. And it's labor relations, and unions have a huge part in a lot of people's jobs. And so there was a lot of like, what's going on here? And depending on whether it was your job that was mandating things or it was for flying, then that's something against the federal government. So, you know, it's not like it was a clear cut, easy, okay, it's this lawyer needs to take it on. It was so incredibly diverse in the end, and so many different factors to it. But going to your original question, yes, it was incredibly disappointing for me to see more lawyers not standing up, let alone taking these cases. But I was seeing law firm after law firm talking about vaccine mandates in their law offices. And correct me if I'm wrong, but you're a lawyer as well, or were?
Yes, I am. Yeah, I do a a small practice up in Peterborough. And yeah.
Okay. And like most people know, when you're a lawyer too, it's, you have an office, you're not around a lot of people. It's pretty, you know, unless you're meeting with somebody, you're not face to face with somebody. It's not like we're in a high, turnover place and profession. Like you, some days you go a whole day without seeing anyone except for like your assistant or something like that. And so it just came out, and it didn't make sense to me too, but they were pushing these mandates in their own offices. And that was their own, you know, their own mandate. The government didn't make them have those mandates. So when I saw that happening, I was just scratching my head. And obviously, if that's the kind of law firm and lawyer you are, you're not going to be the one defending people when they're challenging these mandates.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I appreciate that, because there's a lot of people came to me as well who were into labor unions, and there was nothing I could really do to help because of the collective agreements that required the union to represent them. And then you'd have unions who are not going to represent the employee because they are, you know, very much going along with the COVID narrative. And the only way to fight that, of course, you'd have to go to the Labor Relations Board to basically take the unions and say, hey, order them to represent me. And so sometimes they're successful, sometimes they're not. And so it's a very complicated process. So I certainly appreciate that for sure. And yeah. And yourself now, were you in, so you were doing the wellness cafe kind of program or like business? That's what you were doing at the time of COVID?
Or yeah.
Just before?
Yeah, I had a yoga studio and a healthy food cafe. And so it was... Okay. Yoga studios were the first to close and the last to open. Meanwhile, the liquor store, the convenience store next to me were selling cigarettes and alcohol. And I'm like, really? This is what we're doing during like a health pandemic, closing down like the fitness places and not the alcohol and the cigarette stores? Okay.
Yeah, I know. It really is... humorous in some ways, the juxtaposition of the incongruent, right? I mean, it's like, what's happening here? And of course, the various churches got caught up into this, right? Because they saw the box stores open, and yet they weren't able to be open, or at least very, very limited vis-a-vis, you know, what the box stores could have.
Well, there was one church that was hosting some of the documentaries that I've seen over COVID here more recently now, but they're literally across from a Costco, and apparently they were like, you know, closed down whatever their restrictions are, and they would just see the full parking lot across the street, and they're like, are you serious? Like, how do you not fight for yourself and your facility and your business and your beliefs when you see just across the street? And that was for me. There literally was a liquor store and a convenience store, one on each side. And I was like, this is silly.
Yeah. Now, you got involved with the Trucker Freedom Convoy. In fact, your name has been out there in the press, and obviously your experience then at the Public Order Emergency Commission. But tell us about how you got involved representing the truckers.
Sure. So I was working with the Civil Liberties Association at the time. And I was like everybody else in Canada, just, you know, it all happened like this. And all I saw was on social media, $1 million, $2 million, $10 million, like just rising. And you're like, oh my gosh, this is really, you know, heating up. And I was working on some COVID-related cases. I had already filed on behalf of four doctors in Alberta a lawsuit against the Alberta Health Services, and we were working on Premier Peckford's file at the time. So I was like quite involved in these things. And the first weekend that the convoy was in Ottawa, I was still in Edmonton, and Edmonton had a great convoy that weekend as well here. And I went there, and after all the work I was going through, just going there, it was like, wow, look at all these people. It was just so great. And I think it was Wednesday, we had a call for the Peckford file, and Keith Wilson was on the Zoom call, and we were waiting for participants to come in. And Keith is like, who's this person that wants to get into the meeting? And it was somebody with the organization I was working on. I'm like, he's with us. Just let him in. And Keith was like, okay. So he let him in, and a few more people came in, and they informed us that they got a call from Tamara Leach in Ottawa saying that they're looking for some lawyers because, you know, they're in Ottawa, lots is going on, and they think they might need some legal representation. And they were looking at who might be able to assist them. That was Wednesday. We flew out the next day. No, it was Tuesday. We flew out the next day, Wednesday. We found out at 10:30 on Tuesday evening we were leaving. Keith and I were in a plane in Edmonton because we were the furthest west at 6 a.m., I believe, and landed in Ottawa at 10:30 at night.
Oh, wow.
It was one of those days. And that was just prediction of how it was in Ottawa, just, you know, nonstop chaos and...
So what kind of issues were you having to face once you got on the ground?
Well, that's what's hilarious. I'm laughing because when we were flying down, we were thinking that, well, we didn't know. We just saw what we saw on social media. And we had a brief call with Tamara and some of the others in Ottawa on a really bad Zoom connection before we flew in. And so we assumed that the first case we would have would be the city of Ottawa would very likely take us to court with an injunction to move some of the trucks, because we could tell that there were, you know, some issues with access into downtown. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we assumed we would be dealing with at first order. Instead, one of the first big things we were dealing with was the GoFundMe that was suggesting that they would be pulling out or that they wouldn't be releasing any of the money anymore. So we had written like a 5-page letter to GoFundMe on the plane because we were made aware that they've come with all these questions about whether or not this is they're funding criminal activity and all this stuff. So we explained it in a long letter to GoFundMe. And we had a call with GoFundMe and their lawyers when we got on the ground the next day. So that was the first kind of real legal issue. And then Friday at 5:30, we got notice that two of our clients, that being Tamara Leach, Chris Barber, were being sued on a honking injunction by a private citizen, and we were to be in court the next day, Saturday, at noon.
Okay. And
so we got notice at 5:30. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was, and that was just how it was. It was from one, you know, thing. So the two first things legally was, like I said, the GoFundMe and then this honking injunction by a private citizen. There was, in the end, the city of Ottawa ended up filing getting an order from court, but they did it on an ex parte basis. So they didn't even notify us. They did that on February 14th. So the same day the Emergencies Act was invoked, they went to court, got an ex parte order for a little bit of cleanup and like no fireworks or something like that. But they never, you know, they didn't even bother to notify the lawyers that have, you know, made it publicly available that they're there to help at least some of the protesters.
And what was your sense of being there right into the thick of things, I guess, legally, regarding, you know, the mood of the place, the mood of the organizers, and really, I guess, in some way there were organizers, but there was a lot of fluidity, right? I mean, there was a lot of people that were doing their own thing, but I guess generally, as I observed, it would appear that, you know, with Keith and the Freedom Corps, They were more or less just kind of trying to corral everyone and make sure that everyone's on the same page. But what was the mood that you sensed while you were there?
Yeah, so I'll just comment on the organizer bit, because 100%. It's so odd to even use those words sometimes, because you could hardly organize a birthday party in two weeks. And here, you know, they're trying to frame this like it was maybe the largest protest in Canadian history was organized in 2 weeks. No, that didn't happen. This was clearly just grassroots. People just embarked on this. And what it really was with the people that kind of rose to the top was that they were able to command a little bit more, you know, attention, and they were, you know, able to, the way I would describe Tamara Leach's role is more the mother hen. She was like, okay, what do you need now? Pat, pat on the head, or like move on a little bit. And Chris Barber, of course, quite gregarious, and people enjoy him. Trucker, of course. So he was able to get on with the truckers. And that was about, you know, as nefarious as the organization was. And like you said, yeah, there were so many different moving parts all of the time. And that's what it was. So the way I would assess the mood is it was a million moving parts all of the time. It was basically impossible to get everyone on the same page, because, like you said, everyone was there on their own fruition and for their own reasons. But what was beautiful about it, and why it lasted so long, and why the government was so keen to get this put out, was that the Canadians were so united in their cause that no matter what the challenge was, they came together. And they figured out how they're going to help. If, you know, when the police was started to take away people's fuel for no reason, Ottawinians, I think they are, and other people just started bringing it in. And it's like, there's a problem. We've got a solution. And that was the beauty. That was the mood. Well, we're here. We're here because we want to be together. We're here because we want to hold the government to account. And we're going to do this kind. We're going to do this peacefully. We're going to do this in a fun manner. That was the mood that I experienced.
And of course, it's fascinating how in the mainstream media, none of that was relayed. It was the one or two shots or pictures that they had of the various Confederate flag and the Nazi flag, and that somehow then was the frame of reference that everything was viewed at.
Yeah, which I don't even understand how that narrative could have played out for so long, and it's unfortunate that it did. And that's definitely the downfall of the mainstream media and why nobody can trust that kind of media anymore. But the evidence from the Public Order Emergency Commission from the Superintendent of Intelligence with the Ontario Provincial Police said that the amount of serious crime, was shocking. The lack, So the quote was, the lack of serious crime was shocking. So in the 3 week period, there was just double digits, and it's in the low double digits. It's like 13 or something. Criminal charges. And we don't even know who those were. Were those just Ottawa residents? We were never privy to the information of how many of those were protest related or initiated by protesters. Whereas you look at Stanley Cup finals in Vancouver, one night had over 200 charges. And so you just compare the two, and how does that narrative play and continue to play for 2 years when there's nothing to support it? One flag that nobody knows who that person was got shooed away. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I referred to that as the truckers themselves were so anti-establishment, and the establishment that I call them are members of a cathedral. Like, I mean, you're members of the elite or the progressive, the ideologically committed, on par with the prime minister. If you had that mindset, then any little twitch at all was seen as something that was horrible. It was violent. It was, you know, the horns were violent. The, you know, all the rest. I remember listening to Chrystia Freeland at the commission, where she was saying how this one girl was ahead of her, and the trucker blew the horn, and the girl jumped, and that was somehow, you know, tremendous amount of violence that she suffered.
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah.
I just, did you say that the truckers or the protesters were anti-establishment? Is that how you started it?
Yeah. So, like, I mean, they were going against, for first of all, the COVID narrative, the government narrative, and that in that sense, they were going against what the mainstream media would say, what the government said, what the prime minister said. In that sense, it was kind of like
Yeah. And the only reason I just wanted to make sure, because this is not, you know, that's certainly what they were trying to be framed as, is like anti-establishment and right-wing conspiracy theorists. But if you look at how they actually behaved and acted, it was like, abide by the law, police is our friend, we're here to ensure that everyone is taken care of, do not do anything illegal, do not trespass. And you're very, you know, it's just anti-corruption or anti-bad government policies and things like that. And holding the government to account, which is in fact our job in a democracy. So if you just boil it down to what they were doing, is just holding their government to account. There's nothing more nefarious than that. Hey, we want to know what's going on with these COVID mandates. Let us know. We're not really, we see there seems to be a disconnect. A bunch of other countries have gotten rid of their COVID mandates. What's going on here, Mr. Prime Minister? Let us know.
And it was laughable, really, when you think of how the prime minister was calling, you know, obviously the fringe minority with unacceptable views. And yet when you were there in the crowd, I mean, you had people from various areas of life, old, young, ethnic minorities and all the rest. And it was just, it was just quite a fascinating experience for Canadians. I noticed that, first of all, our time is starting to go away on us, but I want to talk about your thoughts about how it is that even coming up now to almost 2 years since the convoy, and yet it's still very much part of our language. It's still pretty much part of our people are referring to it, politicians refer to it, mainstream media love to pigeonhole people, or, you know, they're supporters of the truckers, that kind of thing. And almost we have this constant reminder of the trucker convoy, and it strikes me as something that I find fascinating, in that we continue to talk about it so far down the road. I guess 2 years is not a long time, but nevertheless, it strikes me that this event was a pivotal moment in the country, in the country's history.
Oh yeah, 100%. I don't think that this conversation will go away very quickly. And I think the most unfortunate part of it is the division that it caused. And that's a lot of the conversation, is it's right. Not a conversation about, okay, let's talk about the facts. It's like you said, it's people are being pigeonholed. And that is, for me, a very sad thing that has come out over these last few years with COVID, is just how insanely divided Canadians have become, and how unsophisticated the conversation is. And that I'm hoping to elevate it a little bit by having conversations again, instead of attacking one another. Apparently we're supposed to be a very diverse and inclusive country, and yet I feel like we are probably, you know, if you're pretending to be something you're not, that's not a good look either.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. Well, listen, we have run out of time right now, but I'm just wondering if you could just, if there's a concluding thought here on what we've just talked about, and I'd love to have you just stay with us for another moment of conversation, but any final thought?
Yeah, well, I really do hope that people have, this has opened their eyes. I think that what the Freedom Convoy did in Canada, I hope, is at a minimum reminded people that they have to take part in democracy in order for it to stay healthy and strong. I think in Canada, we've been incredibly apathetic and just asleep at the wheel here. And as a result, elected officials have had an opportunity, you know, to take the steering wheel and go the way that they want to go. And there's a lot of Canadians that are frustrated with the system and are very good at social media comments, but are not taking a more direct step in engaging this democracy. There's so much that can be done, particularly at a local level, educating ourselves on how our system really works instead of just being angry about everything. And so that's why I've created and founded this organization called Empowered Canadians, because I'm hoping through education we can really elevate the conversation and start to get involved a little bit more sophisticated and strategically, just as Canadians.
Mm, excellent. So where can they go to find more information about Empowered Canadians?
So we have a website, empoweredcanadians.ca, and we are on, you know, most of the social media channels as well. So we're offering a couple courses right now. One is just a basic civics course that I think every Canadian should take, just to remind ourselves what the different division of powers have. So what the federal government versus the provincial government versus the municipal government does, how our legal system works, what the charter actually says. Let's not call it toilet paper garbage until we've actually read the charter and maybe three cases that relate to the charter. I understand people are frustrated, but how are we going to affect change if we don't understand these structures and systems? So that's the goal. And there's information about that.
Well, that is fantastic. Well, listen, thank you so much, Eva, for being with us. And I'm looking forward to our next conversation.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And folks, we want to thank you for taking the time to spend with us here now as I've spoken with Eva Chipiak, who was very much involved as legal counsel with the Trucker Freedom Convoy. And on this program, you may agree or disagree with the opinions and views expressed by myself or by my guests. But that's okay, because on Freedom Feature, we want to have open, honest, and transparent discussion and dialogue. And until next time, I'm Barry Bussey. The fight for freedom consists not only in the legal battles in court, but also in the battle of ideas at the universities and in the media. It takes time, effort, and money to keep on top of the debates for freedom. Your donation allows us to keep fighting for all Canadians. firstfreedoms.ca